Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. Yesterday, in fact, I was working on the home server, and I mentioned that the RAM was snookered, or one of the RAM sticks. One of the RAM sticks. It was like a mismatch or something. Anyway, as this was brand new and it was my first time in donkey's years, to use an Irish saying, working on a computer, one catastrophizes sometimes, and I said, I probably bent a pin in the CPU socket. And I was peering my flashlight, my torch that Herman Popperberry said was a pro move to have one. And I do feel like it's a pro move. They're so useful, these little headlamps. And I was staring at the CPU socket. And, if you stare long enough at that tiny little thing, you'll probably see something that looks like a bent pin, or you really will. But I was thinking, so I was asking ChatGPT, of course, my companion in all things technical. Okay, if it is, worst case scenario, it's a bent pin. Is a motherboard finished? Do I just need to go and buy a new motherboard, or can you actually fix this? And if I could fix it, do I need to just bring this to a computer store? And I like how ChatGPT, I actually find it very good at de-escalating situations. You know, usually people associate Dr. Google with giving you the worst possible thing. Even with health stuff, it's pretty like... So it said, it's probably not. Even if it's a bent pin, you're probably okay. Here's what you can use to straighten it out. So that was good to know, and I thought to myself, for these little technical things where you assume sometimes your expensive hardware is toast, or you bring it to a tech store and you pay a lot of money for them to say we couldn't do anything, I think there's a lot to be said for, if you're really into this, having your own repair gear. So Herman and Corin, when we're looking at stuff like a CPU socket, we're really talking at a very, very, it's very small, delicate work. And I always feel that if I had the right tools for the job, I'd actually be a lot braver by trying it out. Because when you start improvising and using toothpicks, you kind of feel like you're almost asking for trouble. So I put into ChatGPT today, for this kind of delicate work, is there anything I could actually have at home that if I had something like this, it would work? And it was suggesting an ESD mat. It said that a microscope was non-negotiable, and some very fine tips, tweezers. So Herman and Corin, would this be your recommendation? And do you think it is possible to actually undertake repairs like this for computer components? And the other thing that I was wondering, I had an idea. It's always kind of nerve-wracking to learn the ropes on live computers, because if you mess up, if your hand, jerks even an inch, that could spell a catastrophe. So it's kind of high pressure work, and I always feel like it would be great to have something like a learning board for practicing this kind of work. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that, as to what you might use to practice on. Obviously it's not going to be financially feasible to build a spare computer just for the purpose of learning how to repair a bent CPU socket pin. But maybe there's something like a small affordable SBC you can think of that might have enough components in it that you can, you might find some projects that you could upgrade it. But also, if you did break something, it wouldn't be a catastrophe. Because I always wonder about these PC shop guys. Everyone walks into them with all these different parts. How do they kind of get good enough that they know what they're doing without, taking the big risk that they're going to break everyone's hardware that comes in which case they'd be pretty quickly out of business? Herman and Court, a socket by PC Repairs at Home. Ben's CPU socket pins and what one can do. The background noise, for anyone wondering, was the Mahane Yehuda Market in Jerusalem on a Friday. Over to you two.
Hey everyone, welcome back to my weird prompts. I am Korn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, the one and only Herman Poppleberry.
That is me, Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And man, Korn, the energy in the house has been a little tense lately, hasn't it? Our housemate Daniel has been huddled over his home server like he is performing open-heart surgery.
He really has. He sent us a voice note about it, and you can hear the market noise in the background because he was probably out clearing his head after a stressful morning of staring at silicon. He thinks he bent a pin in his CPU socket. It is that classic moment of dread every PC builder faces. You drop the chip in, or you are cleaning something, and suddenly you see that one little glimmer of light reflecting off a pin at the wrong angle.
It is the absolute worst feeling. It is like a tiny gold-plated tragedy. And Daniel was asking if the advice he got from ChatGPT is actually sound. It suggested an ESD mat, a microscope, and fine-tip tweezers. He is wondering if that is overkill, or if it is even feasible to do this at home.
It is a great prompt because it touches on that bridge between being a hobbyist and being a real repair technician. So, Herman, let us start with the big question. Is this a suicide mission for a home server, or is a bent pin a death sentence for a motherboard?
Definitely not a death sentence, but it is certainly a high-stakes operation. To understand why, we have to look at the transition from PGA to LGA. PGA is pin grid array, where the pins are on the CPU itself. That is what AMD used for years until recently. LGA is LAN grid array, where the pins are in the socket on the motherboard. That is what Intel has used for a long time and what AMD switched to with the AM5 socket. LGA pins are much, much more delicate. They are like tiny, pre-sprung copper whiskers. If you bend one, you aren't just straightening a wire, you are trying to restore a specific spring tension and a very precise geometric alignment.
Right, because if it doesn't make contact with the pad on the bottom of the CPU, you lose a memory channel, or the PCIe lanes drop out, or the whole thing just refuses to post. Now, Daniel mentioned the toolset suggested to him. Let us talk about the microscope first. Most people think they can just use a magnifying glass, or even just squint really hard with a flashlight. Is a microscope actually a requirement?
I would say for modern LGA sockets, like the LGA 1700 or the AM5, a microscope isn't just a recommendation, it is almost a necessity if you want a high success rate. We are talking about pins that are spaced less than a millimeter apart. If you try to do it with the naked eye, you are guessing. You might get it back into what looks like the right spot, but you could easily be off by a hair, and when you clamp that load plate down, you could crush the pin or short it against its neighbor.
And there is the parallax issue, right? If you are looking at it from an angle, it looks straight, but from the top, it is still skewed.
Exactly. A good digital microscope, one of those ones you can plug into a monitor, is a game changer. It lets you see the pin in three dimensions if you move the board around. You can see the height of the pin relative to the others. That is the part people forget. It isn't just about the left to right alignment, it is about the z-axis. If the pin is too low, it won't touch the CPU. If it is too high, it might get crushed or even snap when you apply pressure.
Okay, so the microscope is a win. What about the tweezers? Daniel mentioned fine-tip tweezers. I have seen people use credit cards or mechanical pencils for this. Are tweezers actually the best tool for the job?
It depends on the bend. If the pin is just slightly out of alignment, the mechanical pencil trick is actually legendary. You take a 0.5 millimeter or 0.7 millimeter mechanical pencil, remove the lead, and slide the hollow metal tip over the pin. It gives you a perfect lever to gently nudge it back. But if the pin is a bit flat or twisted, you need tweezers. But not just any tweezers, you need high-quality, anti-magnetic, fine-tip tweezers, usually the ones labeled as ESD safe.
Why anti-magnetic?
Because the last thing you want is for your tool to be slightly magnetized and pull the pin toward it as you are trying to let go. These pins are so light that a tiny bit of magnetic force can ruin your precision. You want something with a very sharp point so you can get under the shoulder of the pin without touching the ones next to it. It is like playing Operation, but the stakes are a $500 motherboard and a potential short circuit that could fry your CPU.
That brings us to the ESD mat. Daniel was told he needs one. Now, I know you are a stickler for static safety, Herman. Is the mat really necessary for a pin repair, or is it more about just not working on a shag carpet while wearing wool socks?
Look, most modern components are surprisingly resilient to static, but when you are poking metal tools into the heart of the motherboard's communication array, you are bypassing a lot of the built-in protections. An ESD mat is about peace of mind. It grounds the board and it grounds you. If you don't have a mat, at the very least, you should be using an anti-static wrist strap connected to a grounded metal object. The real danger isn't just a spark you can feel. It is the micro discharges that can degrade a trace over time. You might fix the pin, but then a month later, the board starts having mysterious stability issues because you zapped a tiny capacitor nearby.
So, the kit Daniel was recommended is actually a very professional starting point. But let us talk about the feasibility for a home user. Daniel is working on a home server. Usually, these are built with slightly older or more robust hardware, but if he is using a modern server chip, those sockets are even denser. Is it realistic for someone who isn't a professional to actually succeed at this?
It is absolutely realistic, provided you have patience. This is not a 10-minute job. This is a clear the table, put the phone away, 2-hour job. The biggest mistake people make is rushing. They get frustrated, they nudge it too hard, and the pin snaps. Copper has a property called work hardening. Every time you bend it, it gets more brittle. If you bend a pin back and forth 3 or 4 times trying to get it perfect, it will eventually just fatigue and break off. Then you are really in trouble.
What happens if it breaks? Is that the end of the road?
For a home repair? Usually, yes. Professionals can sometimes solder on a replacement pin, but that requires a level of micro-soldering that is way beyond what most people can do at home. However, here is a little secret. Not every pin in a CPU socket is vital. A lot of them are redundant ground pins or power delivery pins. If you break a single ground pin out of 100, the system might still run perfectly fine. But if you break a pin that handles a specific memory channel or a clock signal, you are toast.
That is fascinating. So, there is a bit of a gamble there. You could fail to repair but still have a working system if you are lucky with which pin it was. But obviously, we don't want to rely on luck. Daniel asked about a learning board or an affordable alternative to practice on. He mentioned a small single-board computer, like a Raspberry Pi. Would that work for practice?
Actually, no. And this is a common misconception. Most single-board computers use what is called BGA, or ball grid array. The processor is soldered directly to the board. There are no pins to bend because there is no socket. If you want to practice socket repair, a Raspberry Pi won't help you at all.
So what is the best way to practice? If someone wants to get good at this before they touch their main server, where do they go?
The best practice material is e-waste. Go on eBay or go to a local recycling center and look for dead motherboards. You can usually find old Intel boards from 10 years ago for $5 or $10. They use the same LGA architecture. In fact, if you find a board that is already broken, you can intentionally bend the pins and then try to fix them. It is the perfect low-stakes environment. You can learn exactly how much pressure it takes to move a pin, and, more importantly, exactly how much pressure it takes to snap one.
That makes so much sense. It is like a cadaver lab for computer parts. You learn the anatomy without any risk to a living patient. It is actually a great way to build that muscle memory.
Exactly. And to Daniel's other question about how the professionals do it. How do the guys at the repair shops gain experience without breaking customer gear? It is a mix of 3 things. First, exactly what we just said. They spend hours on scrap boards. Any reputable shop has a pile of donor boards in the back. New technicians usually start by harvesting components or practicing repairs on those before they are ever allowed to touch a customer's machine.
I imagine there is also a lot of shadowing involved.
For sure. You watch the senior tech do it under the microscope for weeks. You see the subtle movements, the way they brace their hands. Bracing is huge. You never want your hand floating in the air while you are doing micro repair. You want your wrists firmly planted on the table so only your fingers are moving. It reduces the tremors.
And what about certifications? Does a shop tech need a specific license to do this?
There are certifications like the CompTIA A+, which covers the basics, but for actual board-level repair, people look for things like IPC certifications. Those are the industry standards for soldering and electronic assembly. But honestly, in the world of independent repair shops, your reputation and your portfolio of successful repairs matter more than a piece of paper.
It is interesting because there is this whole underground economy of repair videos now too. People like Louis Rossman have made it very popular to watch high-level board repair. Do you think that has helped or hurt the average user's confidence?
It is a double-edged sword. It is great because it shows people that these things are fixable. It fights against the throwaway culture where you just buy a new board because of one bent pin, but it also makes it look easier than it is. Those guys have $10,000 setups with high-end thermal cameras and professional-grade soldering stations. When a hobbyist tries to replicate that with a $20 soldering iron from the hardware store, they can end up doing more damage.
Right. The tools really do make the difference. But for Daniel's specific problem, the bent pin, he doesn't need a $10,000 setup. He just needs the patience we talked about. Now, let us look at the second-order effects here. Let us say Daniel successfully straightens the pin. He puts the CPU in, and the server boots up. Is he in the clear, or should he be looking for long-term issues?
He should definitely run some rigorous stress tests, specifically memory tests. A lot of the pins in the socket are dedicated to the memory controller. If a pin is making contact, but it is a weak contact, or if it is slightly misaligned, you might get intermittent memory errors. The system might work fine for an hour and then suddenly blue screen when you are doing something intensive. He should run something like Memtest 86 for at least 24 hours. He should also check his PCIe lane speeds. If he has a graphics card or a high-speed network card in there, he should make sure it is actually running at the full 16x or 8x speed. A bent pin can sometimes cause a lane to drop, and the system will just silently downgrade the connection.
So it might feel fixed, but you are only getting half the performance you paid for. That is a sneaky one.
It really is. And there is also the thermal aspect. If a pin is bent such that it is creating a tiny bit of extra resistance, it could theoretically generate more heat at that point of contact. In extreme cases, that can lead to carbonization or burning of the pad on the CPU. It is rare, but it is why you want that contact to be as perfect as possible.
You know, this whole conversation makes me wonder about the future of socket design. If these pins are so fragile and causing so much stress for users and technicians alike, why are we still using this system? Is there something better on the horizon?
It is a trade-off. LGA is actually the safer option for the industry because it is easier to replace a motherboard than a CPU. If the pins are on the CPU, and you bend them, you are risking a $1,000 chip. If they are on the board, you are risking a $200 board. But we are seeing a move toward more BGA in the professional and high-end mobile space. Eventually, as chips get more complex and the pin density gets even higher, we might reach a point where manual repair is simply impossible for a human. We are already getting close.
That is a bit of a somber thought. The era of the home repair might have a shelf life. But for now, for Daniel and his home server, the door is still open.
It is. And honestly, there is something incredibly satisfying about fixing a bent pin. It is that moment when you look through the microscope, you see everything lined up in perfect rows like soldiers on parade, and then the system boots. It is a real sense of accomplishment.
I can imagine. It is like winning a very tiny, very expensive game of chess against Entropy.
Exactly. And hey, if any of you listening have ever had a socket disaster or a miracle repair story, we would love to hear about it. You can get in touch through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
Definitely. And while you are there, you can check out all our previous episodes. We have covered everything from the ethics of AI to the physics of extreme cooling. This is actually episode 601, so there is a massive archive for you to dive into.
601. Man, we have been doing this a long time, Korn.
We have. And we couldn't do it without you guys. If you are enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify or whatever podcast app you use. It genuinely helps the show reach new people who might be staring at a bent pin right now, looking for some hope.
It really does. It is the best way to support the show.
Well, I think we have given Daniel enough to chew on. Herman, any final words of wisdom for our housemate before he goes back to the microscope?
Just one thing. Don't forget to breathe. When you are doing micro repair, people tend to hold their breath to keep their hands steady, but that actually makes your heart beat harder and can cause more tremors. Take slow, deep breaths, keep the coffee to a minimum until after the job is done, and remember that even if it breaks, it is a learning experience.
Wise words as always. All right, that is it for this episode of My Weird Prompts. Thanks for listening, everyone.
See you next time.
So, Herman, I was thinking about what you said regarding the redundant pins. If we are talking about an LGA 1700 socket, that is 1700 pins in a space the size of a postage stamp, the density is just mind-boggling.
It really is. And the reason for that density isn't just about the number of connections. It is about signal integrity. When you are running data at the speeds of DDR5 memory or PCIe Gen 5, the physical distance between the CPU and the components has to be as short as possible. Any interference or crosstalk between those pins can ruin the signal. That is why they are so close together and why the alignment is so critical. If a pin is bent just a little bit, it could act like a tiny antenna, picking up noise from the pin next to it.
That is a great point. It isn't just about the electrical connection. It is about the electromagnetic environment. It is like trying to have a conversation in a crowded room where everyone is shouting. If you aren't standing in exactly the right spot, you can't hear anything.
Perfect analogy. And that is why the microscope is so important. You are looking for more than just contact. You are looking for symmetry. The way the light reflects off the tops of the pins should be uniform. If you see one pin that is dark while the others are bright, it means it is at a different angle.
You know, I was reading a paper recently about the metallurgy of these pins. They aren't just copper. Usually, they are a copper alloy, like beryllium copper, which is chosen for its spring properties, and then they are plated with nickel, and finally gold. The gold is there because it doesn't oxidize. If you had bare copper, it would develop a layer of tarnish in weeks, and the connection would fail.
Right, and that gold plating is incredibly thin. It is measured in microns. One of the dangers of using tweezers that are too sharp or being too aggressive is that you can actually scratch through the gold plating. If you expose the nickel or the copper underneath, you are introducing a point of failure for the future. Over a few years, moisture in the air can cause a corrosion at that scratch point, and suddenly your server starts crashing.
So, even if you straighten it, if you are too rough, you might be setting a time bomb.
Exactly. That is why people sometimes use a tiny bit of high-quality contact cleaner, like Deoxide T, after a repair. It can help protect any areas where the plating might have been compromised. But you have to be very careful not to leave a residue that could attract dust.
It is such a delicate balance. It makes me appreciate the engineering that goes into these things. We take it for granted that we can just buy these parts and they work, but the tolerances are practically miraculous.
They are. And that is why I always tell people, if you are building a PC, the most dangerous moments are when the socket is open. Keep that plastic cover on until the very last second before the CPU goes in. Don't even breathe on it.
I remember when you first told me that. I thought you were being paranoid, but after seeing some of the horror stories online, I get it now. One stray hair or a tiny flake of skin can be enough to cause a problem.
It sounds crazy, but at this scale, a piece of dust is like a boulder.
Let us go back to the professional side for a second. You mentioned how shops handle the risk. Do they have insurance for this kind of thing? Like, if a tech snaps a pin on a customer's top-of-the-line Threadripper board, who pays for that?
Most professional shops have errors and omissions insurance, but honestly, for a single motherboard, they usually just eat the cost. It is part of the cost of doing business. That is why the labor rates for board-level repair are so high. You aren't just paying for the 10 minutes it takes to nudge a pin, you are paying for the years of experience and the risk the shop is taking by touching your hardware. If a shop charges you $100 to fix a bent pin, they are basically saying, we are confident enough to bet $100 that we won't break your board.
That is a good way to frame it. It is a risk premium, and it is also why some shops won't even touch bent pins. They see it as a liability nightmare.
Totally. I have seen shops that have a strict no bent pin policy. They will just tell the customer to buy a new board. It is safer for them, but it is a bummer for the customer who could have had a simple fix.
This is where the right to repair movement comes in, right? The idea that we should have access to the tools and the information to fix our own stuff. If the manufacturer won't fix it and the local shop is too scared to touch it, the user is left with a piece of junk unless they take the initiative like Daniel is doing.
Exactly. And the tools Daniel mentioned, the microscope and the ESD mat, those are the foundational tools of the Right to Repair movement. Once you have a microscope, a whole world of repair opens up to you. You can start looking at blown capacitors, burnt traces, or even just doing a really thorough cleaning of a dirty component. It changes your relationship with your technology. You stop being a consumer and start being a steward.
I love that. A steward of technology. It is a much more intentional way to live. Instead of just replacing things when they break, we take responsibility for their maintenance and longevity.
It is also better for the planet. The amount of e-waste we generate is staggering, and a lot of it is perfectly fixable. If every PC enthusiast had the skills to fix a bent pin or swap a fan, we could keep hardware in service for years longer than we do now.
Well, I think Daniel is on the right path. He is asking the right questions, and he is willing to invest in the tools. I am actually excited to see if he pulls it off. Maybe we can have him on a future episode to talk about the success or the failure of the Great Server Resurrection.
I would love that. It would be a great follow-up.
All right, I think we have really exhausted the topic of pins for today. Herman, thanks for sharing all that technical detail. I always learn something new when we dive into the hardware side of things.
My pleasure, Korn. It is what I live for.
And to everyone listening, thanks for sticking with us. We know this was a bit of a deep dive into the weeds, but that is what my weird prompts is all about. We take those specific, niche questions and try to find the broader meaning and the technical truth behind them.
And don't forget, if you have a weird prompt of your own, whether it is about hardware, software, or just the strange way the world is changing, send it our way. You can find the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
We are also on Spotify, so make sure to follow us there to get every new episode as soon as it drops. We have a lot of exciting topics lined up for the coming weeks, so you won't want to miss them.
Definitely not.
All right, let us head out. I think I hear Daniel calling for help with his microscope setup.
Oh boy, here we go. Duty calls.
Thanks again for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will see you in the next one.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
One last thing, Herman. Before we go, I was just thinking about the psychological aspect of this. There is a real phenomenon where people get so nervous about these repairs that they actually make their hands shake more. It is like a feedback loop of anxiety.
It is called the intention tremor. The more you focus on keeping your hands still, the more your nervous system overcorrects. That is why the bracing we talked about is so vital. But also, sometimes you just have to walk away. If you feel your heart racing and your vision getting blurry from staring through the lens, take 5 minutes. Go outside, look at the horizon to reset your eyes, and come back when you are calm.
That is great advice. It applies to so many things in life, not just PC repair. Sometimes the best way to move forward is to take a step back.
Exactly. All right, now we really should go help Daniel.
Agreed. See you all soon.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.